It was supposed to be a routine flight. A state-of-the-art Boeing 787 Dreamliner, seasoned pilots, and clear skies. But within 11 seconds after takeoff, Air India flight AI-171 began to drop and never recovered. Crashing and killing everyone on board except for one passenger. There was little to indicate that something was wrong other than the fact that it was falling. This was Air India's first fatal hull loss since their bombing of India Air Flight 182 in 1985, and the first fatal crash and first hull loss of a Boeing 787 Dreamliner since its inception in 2011. How does one of the most advanced jetliners flying today simply fall out of the sky? And how does one normal person survive an airplane crash, an 1800-degree fire, and simply walk away with nothing but a couple of minor injuries? Let's figure this out together. I'm Ricky, and this is 2-Bit Da Vinci. So by now, you've probably watched the crash footage of Flight 171, but just in case you haven't, let's recap. It was a routine afternoon on June 12th, 2025. Clear skies, a sleek Air India 787 Dreamliner was rolling down the 3,500-meter runway 23 at Ahmedabad International Airport, local time 1338, carrying 242 people, 230 passengers, and 12 crew on board on a flight to London Gatwick. Here we can see Air India Flight 171 taken off, and we can see large clouds of dust that pick up on the ground right before takeoff. This kind of suggests that the airplane reached the end of the runway and actually kind of maybe even went past onto the threshold. This was a full flight, full load of fuel, and was probably at its max takeoff weight. We'll get back to that here in a second. The plane started climbing, and everything looked normal during the first 11 seconds of the flight. It reached 625 feet, and then something goes wrong, and it starts losing altitude. Landing gear is still down, and the plane appears to be making a controlled descent, until finally it crashes 29 seconds later into BJ Medical College, less than a mile and a half from the airport, and explodes in a ball of fire. Everything happened so fast, the pilots barely had enough time to give a mayday call before the crash. The ball of fire came from the approximately 33,000 gallons of jet fuel on board on its way to London. Temperatures rose close to 1,830 degrees Fahrenheit or 1,000 degrees Celsius, hot enough to melt metal. And to make matters worse, the plane did crash into a medical college where there's students, teachers, doctors, and patients. 38 people died on the ground and over 50 were injured. With such an incredible maelstrom of chaos, there was very little chance of people surviving. But somehow, miraculously, one did. One of the 230 passengers survived the crash and the blazing inferno with little more than a few burns and scratches, simply walking away on his own 2 feet. This is the only silver lining in what is otherwise a horrible tragedy. Within minutes, emergency services were on the scene, and it took over 50 fire engines, 4 hours to completely extinguish the flames. So that's a look at what happened, and I know you probably have 1,000 questions, so let's just start with some of the details that we know so far. Air traffic controllers at Ahmedabad International Airport confirmed that the pilots made a frantic mayday call just seconds before impact. Some reports say that the Flight 171 reached an altitude of 625 feet above sea level before beginning to descend at a rate of negative 475 feet per second. That's pretty slow, about 5.5 miles an hour. Ahmedabad itself is approximately 174 feet above sea level. That means that the airplane dropped from an altitude of 450 feet. Since from the video we can see that it took 29 seconds to fall, then it was either at a lower altitude or it descended at twice the speed, around 900 feet per minute. Now, the crash was 1.48 miles from the takeoff point, and the total flight time was around 40 seconds, so the average speed was around 133 miles an hour. Now, there's been a lot of conjecture online, and one of the things that you have to keep in mind is it's really hard to know exactly what happened. We will have an investigation. I think NTSB members from the U.S. are actually going to be helping with this, along with the Indian officials. They have recovered the black box, and we'll know more. But let's just kind of talk about some of the things that I've heard online and kind of see if we can break them down. The first question was about flaps. So flaps are what change the wing's composition and structure to change its lift profile from takeoff compared to flight. When you're taking off and landing, when you're going slower, you need to have more lift. So the flaps, front leading edge and trailing edge flaps, extend downward to change the geometry of the wing to create more lift at lower speeds. But when you're going 550 miles an hour at full speed at 35,000 feet, you don't want that. You want the wings to be in a clean configuration and the flaps fold back in. To say that we could know what was happening with the flaps from the grainy footage that we have is basically impossible. From what I saw, though, there was one clip where you can kind of see a little bit of sunlight, a little bit of daylight between the wings. and the flap, which means that the flaps probably were down. And you have to also remember that these modern aircraft, and really all aircraft, have a lot of safety mechanisms to prevent some of these things. Like trying to take off without your flaps deployed, you'll hear a tone in the cockpit. So it's very unlikely that that was the case. My first thought when I saw the footage and I saw the dust come off when the plane took off was that if you see that much dust and debris, you're probably reaching a part of the runway that doesn't normally get a lot of activity, which means like you're overshooting the runway. Again, that is speculation still, but it seems like this was a fully laden aircraft, a full, near full takeoff weight, probably around 500,000 pounds. And this was a situation where the plane just barely took off. There are different checks along the way that a pilot has, rotation speed, pull-up speed. And so if some of those conditions aren't met, you're supposed to abort the takeoff. But in this case, it looked like they took off and there were some other problems after that. Now, the landing gear was still down. I've heard some people argue that maybe the co-pilot accidentally deployed the flaps instead of the landing gear, which would have caused some issues. But they are different controls on a 787. The flaps have detents, you know, so they have a little mechanical, like, over-center lock that they fall into, detents, that keep it much more difficult to accidentally move. And it's completely different than the locking landing gear switch, which has more of a wheel look, and it's in a different part of the cabin. So obviously that could have happened, and we'll know from the black box. That kind of stuff is very easy to identify because we can see what the sensor data and the input tells us. So something to note about airplane takeoff speeds is that there's quite a few of them. Now, the plane could have perfectly taken off even if it had just one engine running from the get-go, as long as it reached the minimum control speed with one engine operation at the critical failure point, which is the furthest point in the runway where the pilot can decide to call off the takeoff and put the brakes on without running out of runway. VR is the rotation speed, which is where the aircraft raises its nose. The liftoff speed depends on many factors like takeoff weight and flap configurations. From what I found, the 787 needs to travel 150 to 180 miles per hour at liftoff, and that it has to be at least 5% higher than the stall speed. So stall speed must have been around 140 to 143 miles an hour. Assume that they took off at 150 miles an hour. So when you compare that the average speed, if we take the average speed of the entire duration of the flight of 133 miles an hour, and you need to have 150 to 180 to take off, it's pretty clear that there was a lot of deceleration happening after takeoff. So instead of accelerating after liftoff, the plane was actually slowing down dramatically. And it took only about 10 to 11 seconds to slow down to the stall speed, which is where the speed where the wing no longer has enough air flowing over it to maintain lift and falls out of the sky. By then, there was almost nothing the pilots could do. I think in these kinds of tragedies, the first thought is always to blame the pilot or the plane, or try to cast blame somewhere. And I think the early reports were blaming the pilots, but I think as more data has emerged, it probably wasn't actually pilot error in this example. The mysteries of this crash lie within two black boxes, the flight data recorder and the cockpit voice recorder, which investigators found on the rooftop of BJ Medical College. Only three eerie messages came from the pilot to air traffic control: didn't achieve thrust, falling, and mayday, mayday, mayday. India's Directorate General of Civil Aviation has ordered a fleet-wide inspection of all Boeing 787 TAC-8s and 787 TAC-9 aircraft, focusing on Gen X engines from General Electric and gear flap systems. It's obvious from the video that the plane had a sudden loss of lift. It almost looked like it had stalled. For those who don't know, stalling is when a wing's angle of attack becomes too high, causing a sudden decrease in lift and an increase in drag, so the plane basically drops. This could happen for two reasons: pitching the plane up too high beyond the critical angle of attack, but that's not what happened here, as the plane held a pretty steady course. The second cause would be deploying the flaps while too close to the critical angle of attack, because flaps tend to make the critical angle smaller. In this graph of lift versus the wing's AOA, the angle of attack, you can see the stall is where lift goes down at higher angles, and the critical angle is at that peak here. See how increasing the flaps angle from 0 to 50 degrees creates more lift, but also lowers the angle of attack peak. So as your wings are, let's say, 12 degrees and the critical angle of attack is 14 degrees, you're good because you're below it. But if you deploy flaps and the COA goes down to 10, but you're still at the same 12 degrees as before, now you're potentially going to be entering the envelope of stall. So from everything that we've seen, it doesn't appear that it was pulling up too high or beyond that threshold. So if it wasn't stalling, then why would it be losing lift? You know, in times like this for engineers, we always kind of go to our memories and our history and stuff. For me, I remember when I was doing flight mishap investigation for the Navy, we had this event that actually was caused by wind shear, or like a sudden change in wind patterns. And that caused some of the things that we saw. So my first thought was that. So it could have been a sudden change in wind speed. The key is that lift depends on the speed of the wing relative to the air. Going faster as an airplane helps, but going into a stronger headwind also does. Now, this relative difference is really what matters. If you're flying at 100 miles an hour into a 100 mile an hour headwind, you essentially have the same level of lift over the wing as if you were flying 200 miles an hour into 0 mile an hour headwinds. If the aircraft encountered a sudden increase in tailwind, it would reduce the plane's relative speed and so would lose lift. So let's check out what we can find about wind speeds at Ahmedabad Airport on the day of the crash. They were expecting to see strong winds from the southwest. Instead, this is what we found. Right between 1 and 2 p.m., the airport had headwinds pointing northeast, not tailwinds. But then I noticed that right when Flight 171 took off, there was a decrease in the headwind of almost 10 knots. That alone can decrease lift. This change happened over 30 minutes, and that's hardly sudden. But since these wind speeds were changing during takeoff, it is possible that Flight AI-171 could have encountered a pocket of significantly reduced headwind. Another possibility is encountering a sudden updraft. The change can momentarily increase the effective AOA beyond the critical point, causing a stall even if the pilot makes no control input. The aircraft's pitch attitude may not change, but the wind's direction relative to the wing does. This is called wind shear. It's quite common on hot days, and this particular day was really hot, with temperatures over 37 degrees Celsius at 1:40 p.m. This also fits with a lone survivor's account, who said that the plane seemed stuck in the sky. So could the pilot have recovered from something like this? It's a bit tricky, to be honest. It's a bit like a 100-foot wave in the ocean if you're a captain of a sea vessel. Wind shear is one of the real unknowns and great dangers in aviation. If you have a sudden pocket of lower pressure air that you fly into, it can completely change the lift character and profile over your wings. Now, if you've ever encountered turbulence before, that is asymmetric differences in the density of the air that you're flying through. So as the wind goes from high and low air pocket densities, it starts to lift and to rattle. If you take it to an extreme and you see a wind shear event that is really, really drastic, it could knock planes out of the sky as lift over the wing suddenly collapses and planes stall. The really dangerous thing about this is a pilot might have 5 to 15 seconds to react here, especially in a plane crash like this one, where they had so little time and they made the mayday calls and they went through everything else. It's hard to imagine what more they could have possibly done. So the standard wind shear escape procedure involves applying maximum thrust, maximum takeoff or going around thrust, TOGA, maximum pitch attitude, and no configurational change. However, this needs to be done in a few seconds because you're consistently losing altitude. And if you don't have much to begin with, that window of time to recover is really small. We also looked at the air temperature and pressure data from the airport on the day of the crash, and this is what we found. The blue line is air temperature and the red one is pressure. Right around 2 p.m., temperature is climbing and the pressure is dropping. This is one of the hottest days in the week. Hot air and low pressure means less air density and therefore less lift. Really, really cold air has less energy, so the molecules don't have as much energy to move around, and so they condense closer to each other, and you have higher density air. The hotter the air gets, the more energy each molecule has. They start moving more quickly, and they take up more volume, and that there's less molecules per volume of air. As a result, when you're flying through less dense air, you make less lift. So at 35 or 40,000 feet, for example, you have to be moving 500 miles an hour because there's less air up there than there is here at sea level. That means that the aircraft would need more speed to take off. Maybe that's why we saw that. So let's take a look at the rollout one more time. Notice that puff of dust at the end? That's because the aircraft used the entire runway to take off, and the turbine exhaust blew the dust around. So as the aircraft starts pitching upward, the thrust from the engines is closer to the ground, and if you've got thresholds that haven't been actively used very much, there might be dust and debris that then goes flying into the air. And that's what we saw. So if you're like me, you're probably thinking, how long of a runway does a 787 need? Notice here that at maximum takeoff weight, which we'll assume they were at since they were nearly at full capacity and a full load for a 5,000-mile flight to London, you need at least 3,300 meters of runway at sea level pressures. And you need to deploy the flaps to 20 degrees, which is almost at its maximum setting. But that length increases drastically as pressures drop. At 2,000 feet altitude, you would need 4,250 meters of runway. So we're talking about operating the plane at its limit with changing environmental conditions. But all that being said, the plane did take off. So one of the theories then is this wind shear theory that high temperatures and low pressures caused a pocket of air that brought the plane down. You kind of see that as like the trajectory of the plane. It's taken off, picking up speed, picking up elevation, and then just suddenly, just as quickly, loses it. But it's been a couple of days, and I've kind of heard and thought about some of the other theories as well. And this, while possible or it could have aggravated the situation, there seems to be more at play. We'll get to one of the main things here in a minute. But if you look at the video again, the wings, when the plane takes off, are flexing, which indicates some level of lift. Another thing that people have talked about is that the fact that the landing gear is down and it was never retracted. This could be of interest because normally as you take off after a couple of hundred feet, you'd be pulling the landing gear up to have a nice clean configuration to finish off your takeoff. But that didn't happen. And there have been some reports that there might have been some issues with the gear. Now, in previous crash videos we've done, like Jeju Air comes to mind, for example, there are situations where like a high stress environment, pilots having to make decisions very quickly with very little information could make mistakes. So that could be that they retracted the flaps instead of the landing gear. That one will be really easy to pinpoint when the investigation concludes because we'll have data that tells you the input procedures and where the settings and everything was set by the pilot. So we'll know if that was at play or not. But that's the landing gear. The second part is the flaps. The thought was that the pilot retracted the flap instead of the landing gear. That seems to not be the case based on the pictures that we've seen. There's evidence we've recovered parts of the wing and the flaps are still extended. The flaps, when they retract back into the plane, it's much more concise and packaged. It'd be much better preserved. And in this situation, we see that the flaps actually were extended. So even if the landing gear, there's something that we'll need to learn more about, the flaps do appear to have been down, and that probably wasn't the cause of this. So then, you know, you put on your engineering hat and you start thinking about, like, what could have gone wrong. The next thing would be engine failures. But like we've mentioned, these planes are incredibly redundant. They have redundant hydraulic systems. You could take a line and puncture an entire hydraulic line, and the systems are redundant to be able to still give you rudder authority and flight authority to be able to fly an airplane and land it safely. Even if you lost one engine or the other, you should still be able to do a emergency maneuver, report to ATC that you have a mayday situation and get immediate clearance for landing at some other airport or the same airport if you can get around and land. But what happened here seems different because of one little piece of information that people have been bringing up online. And I think it's a really good point because there is a very special, very, very backup last ditch effort sort of a device called a RAT, which is a ram air turbine, which is automatically deployed by the airplane. This is not a lever you pull as a pilot. This is something the airplane does automatically on a 787. A ram air turbine is a spring-loaded mechanism that's normally housed in the aircraft, kind of behind the landing gear. And if you lose hydraulic systems, for example, or electronics, if you lose electronics, you don't have any of your cockpit controls. And if you don't have hydraulics, you don't have any kind of authority on the airplane and its control surfaces, you're completely just out of luck. You're flying in a sail with no controls. So this ram air turbine is a way to restore some level of hydraulic authority to an airplane that doesn't have engines. So the ram air turbine falls out into the jet stream and is spun up by the incoming air, and that is able to power a pump and provide some level of hydraulic power to the system. And the footage that we've seen, there may be evidence of this. What appears to be something protruding out near the main landing gear wheel on the right does seem to indicate that it could be a ram air turbine. Again, the data will show us in the flight recordings, but that is very possible. And that wouldn't just deploy randomly. Like if the pilot put the flap in the wrong position or the landing gear wasn't up, that ram air turbine doesn't deploy. That is a very last ditch effort sort of redundancy built in, and it's auto deployed by the aircraft. Also, another little piece of evidence or data, if you will, is when the Air India flight comes by, it makes what sounds like a propeller plane sound. Propeller planes have a much different like acoustic signature than a jet engine. Jet engines have that kind of whirring, whooshing noise. It's a very circular, uniform sound. Whereas a propeller is spinning very quickly and it's a little bit noisier. This kind of sounds like a Cessna. I used to fly Cessnas back a long time ago. That's what you're hearing as the plane is going by. Now, again, is any of this, you know, augmented? Has it been falsified? We don't know. So I'm not going to say that's exactly what happened. But if the ram air turbine were deployed, that is vindication that it wasn't a pilot error. They might have lost two engines. How do you lose two engines? That, so along the line of engineering reasoning, how you lose two engines is actually pretty rare. One way would be bird strikes. Now, Ahmedabad Airport has had a history of bird activity close to the runways. So did a bird bring it down? Well, modern airplanes are built to be resilient to some level to bird strike. In fact, small birds, about 85 grams each, these engines can ingest up to 16 of them, and they're certified to and still operate. Medium birds, up to 2.5 pounds, they're certified to ingest one bird and still operate. But larger birds over 4 pounds, it gets a little bit trickier. Now, let's look at the footage one more time. In previous crashes that we've covered on this channel, we've seen little specks of what likely was a bird maybe getting ingested or something, but there's no real evidence of any of that here. And again, it would have to be ingesting birds and having a bird strike on both engines to have this level of catastrophe. Another reason why both engines could fail is fuel contamination. Fuel contamination with rainwater or particulate pollutants can cause both engines to fail. Now, fuel is pumped from the wing tanks and from the inner tanks inside the aircraft to the jet engines for combustion. Now, if you had a large amount of water or some other non-fuel that was getting combusted, that could cause problems because water won't ignite and combust the way that jet A would, like jet fuel would. And as a result, it could occupy space or kind of muffle the combustion, stall out engines, and so much more. This is nearly impossible to prove at this point, so it would be pure conjecture. But contamination in a fuel system could be the cause. It could be that they were running fuel and at some point something happened and bad fuel or water mixed in with it was shot in and it stalled out the engine, causing it to lose power. That could potentially do it. Now, normally when you see any kind of exhaust or other pollutants or issues with fuel contamination, you will see kind of billowing smoke because the uniform circular operation of a jet engine is very linear. It's very uniform and circular. But if that's disrupted with, you know, fuel contamination or water, for example, then you might see like billowing smoke as the reaction is disrupted. But there doesn't really seem to be any evidence of that either. It's been a tough year, it feels like, in terms of air safety and plane crashes. And I know it's tempting to play armchair investigator as to what happened and who's to blame. But some of these things are really complex and it's really hard to know exactly what happened. This is a really new airplane and a really safe airplane. We've never had a 787 crash until now. And it was seasoned pilots who had thousands of hours of experience flying these things. And the weather wasn't as bad as we've seen planes take off and land in. So this is going to be an interesting investigation to see exactly what happened because it's clearly super, super tragic. And our thoughts and prayers go out to the families that were affected by this. There were some really heartbreaking stories about some of the people that were involved. And if we know more, if there's a interesting engineering component to what actually happened, as we learn more, we can cover it in the future. But hopefully anybody who has any more information, who's watched more YouTube videos than we have or knows more than we do, please sound off below. I'd love for this to be a resource for more information to see what happened. But I think at this point, it seems to me that there was some sort of pretty catastrophic engine event where you had the loss of one or maybe even two engines, maybe loss of other systems. And that's why that ram air turbine was deployed. But we'll see. And if there's new breakthroughs that come through, we'll cover it for you here as always. All right. Thanks for watching. And we'll keep you guys apprised. Thanks. And we'll see you next week.